summer love. There's nothing like it. Those delicious, carefree days filled with fun in the sun and long walks on the beach. Fall head over heels again with Summer Love Bath Collection, only from Bubble Genius. You'll love this set of warm weather wonders, which includes Life's a Beach, our rich, beachy-scented, foaming bath whip. It'll leave your skin smooth and smelling softly of the sunny seaside. You'll also get Beachy Clean, our sandcastle-shaped soap, Formula 421 Room Spray, and Bubble Pop, a deliciously scented rocket pop soap. All this and lots more in Summer Love Bath Collection. BubbleGenius.com, where it's summertime and the bathing is easy.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Do you like Phil Collins? I've been a big Genesis fan ever since the release of their 1980 album, Duke. Before that, I really didn't understand any of their work. It was too artsy, too intellectual. It was on Duke where Phil Collins' presence became more apparent. I think Invisible Touch is the group's undisputed masterpiece. It's an epic meditation on intangibility. At the same time, it deepens and enriches the meaning of the preceding three albums. Kirsty, take off the rope. Listen to the brilliant ensemble playing of Banks, Collins, and Rutherford. You can practically hear every nuance of every instrument. Sabrina, remove your dress.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
You can read about it tomorrow, or possibly see it tonight. But with radio, you get it now and get it right.
Okay, bow your heads. Oh God, ease our suffering in this our moment of great despair. Yea, admit this good and decent woman into thine arms and the flock in thine heavenly area up there. And Moab, he laid its down behind the band of the Canaanites. And yea, though the Hindus speak of karma.
Clark.
I implore you, give her a break.
Clark.
Baruch atah, hallelujah.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
It's Thursday, June 14th, 2012. This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob. That's Chez. Show's brought to you by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, Bubble Genius. It's my favorite soap. Ask for it by name, and especially the soap that's named after me. I'll buy that. So,
this time I promise not to send you to the hospital, Christy.
God.
I'll just stare at it. Eat it.
That's a reference to our conversation on last week's show about Mitt Romney being...
Mitt Romney is Patrick Bateman.
Love it. I love that clip. I almost like that clip where he's talking about Phil Collins and Genesis almost more than the Huey Lewis and the News one. Where he's talking about Invisible Touch with this seductive voice. Like, he thinks he's like the coolest son of a bitch in the world, and he's just like really impressing these women with his knowledge of that Genesis album. We're also brought to you by Full Strength. It's my favorite fitness shake, so go to fullstrength.com and try it yourself. You'll be very happy with it, as I am. Bit of a programming note here at the top of the show. I just noticed this today. Our show on WPWC 1480 AM, WEAC Radio, has moved. It's no longer on Sunday afternoons from 3 to 4. We're now on in morning drive on Saturdays.
Oh, really? Isn't that nice?
Yeah, 7 to 8.
That would be important if people are actually driving to work on a Saturday morning.
Well, there's a lot of people, a lot of blue-collar people, a lot of people who work in the service industry, a lot of people who even work for the government, you know, groundskeepers, things like that.
So to those of you in the service industry, we wish you the best.
Yes, we salute you. Thank you for listening.
We salute you.
7 to 8 a.m. Eastern. And, of course, if you want to listen.
Like that crappy syndicated John and Jeff show where they always talk about how they're third shifters. Oh, God, they're horrible. Oh, my God.
I've never heard of this show. What is it? John and Jeff?
John and Jeff. Oh, my God. Seriously, the crappiest radio show ever conceived by man.
It's in Los Angeles.
Actually, no. It's syndicated. I don't think it's here anymore. They used to play it in L.A. It used to come on after Loveline on KLSX. I honestly can't remember. The only reason I know about it is because I used to sit in my car doing heroin listening to it, which, thank God, at least the heroin made the show a little bit better.
Well, yeah. I mean, I had my ritual. So the ritual was, you know, I'd listen to Loveline on K-Rock back when Adam Carolla and Dr. Drew were hosting it. And then I'd flip over to John and Jeff, which I kid you not is the worst show ever. It's just – it's horrible.
What is it, just a couple of guys talking and
– Yeah, it's a couple of guys and they're – I'm not going to go that much into it. But suffice to say that, you know, I'm sure you can find it online somewhere. But the fun thing is every October – Opie and Anthony do this thing called Jocktober, which is a takeoff of Rocktober. Uh-huh. And what they do, hilarious. I look forward to this every year. Is they have their producer culls really, really bad radio shows from around the country, and they take about an hour and they just play clips from those shows and they just mock the people mercilessly. I mean, you know, just the worst kind of crappy morning radio. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, just, oh, it's horrible, horrible stuff. And every single year, like clockwork, the second to the last show is always John and Jeff because it's just that bad.
You know, we got to steal that for the after party. We need to do like an entire after party about radio, observations about radio, playing old DJ tapes. I'll bring up like my Larry King radio tapes. We can talk about, you know, when we talk about, I really have to get you familiarized with Greaseman, because Greaseman, I think the Greaseman might be the worst disc jockey of all time. I mean, the unfunniest. I mean, he's a talented broadcaster in terms of having a good voice and he knows how to run a board. But what comes out of his mouth is the most annoying. I don't even know how to describe it. He was on in Washington, D.C. for years. He was on he was Howard Stern's replacement on DC 101. And then went syndicated and then was such an idiot. I mean, here was Greaseman's big collapse. The guy just imploded because he told a stupid joke and thought he could get away with it. This is what happened to Greaseman. It was right after. Oh, yeah. Well, there were a couple of things, in fact. Two very, very racist things. He said right after.
Easy way to get fired.
Yeah. Well, right after they created Martin Luther King Day, he said, why don't we off four more of them so we can get the entire week off? That's what Greaseman said.
Yeah, I've heard that. That really bad joke before.
Yeah. That was Greaseman. And then after that, and this is what got him ultimately booted out of real radio and sort of rejected off into the, you know, to the weekend slots on, you know, market number 300 somewhere in the middle of nowhere. He said something, he made a joke about that guy who was dragged behind that pickup truck. That, you know,
James Byrd?
Yeah.
Yeah, James Byrd.
He joked about James Byrd and said something about dragging black people behind trucks.
Why is this guy not why is he in Market 300? Why is he not a star of conservative radio?
Because, you know,
why is he not, like, he should be in every single market in the country, considering, you know, the way conservative radio is these days. That guy should be, like, huge.
That's a great point. That's a great point because, you know, that's what most of those guys have kind of done in order to survive. A lot of those, like, old morning DJs have become conservative talk show hosts, not because they believe any of the crap that comes out of their mouth. It's because
you make a damn fortune doing it.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why they're doing it. And that's
You know something? I'll tell you something. I won't lie about this. They're have been times where, and I'm not saying I'm going to go do conservative radio, but there have been times where I've actually sort of like sitting on my couch, one of those sort of ponderable kind of things where I'm sitting there thinking to myself, how far would I bend my ideals to make a crap ton of money? You know, what would I be willing to do to, you know, if it meant that I could be like filthy freaking rich?
Yeah.
You know, like, would I be willing to say even some of the things that Rush Limbaugh says, not meaning any of them, if I knew damn well that, well, look, you know what, I'm kind of selling myself out, but I have a, you know, a $20 million mansion that I'm living in?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know.
And that's why a lot of these guys, and that this will give you a good taste of what radio guys are really all about. They have no souls. I mean, they're so willing. And these are guys who are just... We're you know, on morning zoo talk shows and or morning zoo radio shows on FM stations. You know, that's why they would, you know, with the ridiculous monkey, they would have commercials with monkeys in them. I mean, Glenn Beck was in a famous commercial for when he was on the morning zoo, when he was just a stupid morning zoo DJ. You know, he had like a, you know, he did a commercial with his radio partner.
Doing blow like all good morning shows. Morning DJs.
That's right. That's right. And there
serious,
was always,
serious cocaine problem.
And they did a commercial with a chimp. And it's like all morning zoo DJs were doing commercials with chimps. Hmm. Oh, yeah. Here's the story. This is what the Grease Man said about James Byrd. He said the Grease Man was playing a sound clip of Lauryn Hill from the 41st Grammy Awards. And then Greaseman says, remarks after this clip, he says, and they wonder why we drag them behind trucks. That was the Greaseman's joke. And that was it. That he did. Then he did, and it's actually on, you can find it on YouTube. He did, I think, what could arguably be described as the most melodramatic apology in the history of sort of broadcast apology. You're kind of an aficionado of the apology.
I've always said that I will respect someone. Look, I don't like Ann Coulter, of course, but I respect the fact that, like, when she says something awful and everybody demands an apology, her response is, screw you. You're not getting crap from me. You know, I mean, whether I like what you say or not, I have much more respect for you if you do not immediately back down in the face of pressure, because a forced apology or a demanded apology is by its very nature not an apology. It's not sincere. You know, it's, well, I got busted. I mean, and, you know, once in a while you find somebody who'll be like, you know, especially if your job is to talk, you find somebody who, like, you know what, my mouth got away from me and I said something stupid. And for that, I am sorry. You know, I didn't mean to offend anybody. And that's one thing. But for the most part, man, you put a gun to somebody's head and say, look, you're going to apologize or you're going to lose your job. I mean, not to bring up ONA twice in, you know, 10 minutes, but when they, when they did the homeless Charlie bit, do you remember that one where they brought in the homeless guy who basically said that he wanted to rape Condoleezza Rice, and he have forcible sex, you know, that he wanted to hold down Condoleezza Rice and have sex with her, and he said the same thing about, like, Queen Elizabeth and a bunch of other people, and ONA got into huge trouble for it. And, you know, they went on the air and they apologized. And one of the things that I really kind of laughed at is, like, a couple of years later, they went, when enough time had passed, they went back on the air and they said flat out, they're like, that whole thing, they played their own apology. And they're like, that whole thing, all bullshit, completely crap. They were threatening to take away our jobs. Every single thing we said, we could not have wanted to apologize less.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not into... Yeah, I'm not into the I'm apologizing to save my life or my career or whatever. Yeah.
Well, it's the same dynamic that you were talking about before. I mean, the insincere apology goes back to the same kind of mentality as being able to, you know, do a right-wing talk show host gig even though you believe nothing of what you're saying. Even though it, in fact, in some cases, runs completely contrary to what you actually believe.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, and that's how corporate CEOs often function. That they don't care about what their business and what their corporation is doing to people or the air or the water. They don't care.
They're making money, and they're making money for shareholders.
That exactly. And that's the entire motivation of having a corporation, having a business, is to make a profit by any means necessary. And oftentimes, any means includes illegal means. It includes harming people. It includes things like sweatshops.
Or simply unethical.
Yeah, unethical. Right. It includes sweatshops. It includes dumping PCBs into the water supply. You know, it includes making those, you know, the sort of famous, what was it, the Pinto thing that they talk about on Fight Club, where they determine whether or not a recall is going to be more or less expensive than a lawsuit, and that's how they decide whether or not to do the recall. That's and some people can simply
the mathematical equation.
And I think it's something like the Pinto memo or something like that, because it had to do with the Ford Pinto. But that's how they think, and that's why if you're at all scratching your head about how and why corporations, why Mitt Romney, for example, can say the things that he says, it's because he comes from that corporate universe, that ability to do whatever is necessary, to do and say whatever he needs to do and say in order to win, in order to make a profit.
And to think that it serves the greater good, because that is such an intrinsically American free market way of thinking. Yeah.
Well, he doesn't care. I don't even think Mitt Romney believes enough in his own government policies, in his own agenda, to really be motivated by that. I think Mitt Romney is all about improving Mitt Romney's station in life. And that's his entire motivation. That's his whole thing. Otherwise, he wouldn't be flip-flopping so much. He wouldn't be all over the board on everything he says. We're going to talk about that a little later on the show. But, you know, and that's why he can so cynically lie every day. I mean, Steve Bannon is doing the job of, you know, a colossus right now. Steve Bannon is keeping track of every lie that Mitt Romney utters. And then, you know, Steve Bannon will print that lie. He posts them all on Fridays. Posts a lie in a big list. And there's like a new list of like 20 items every week. And then Bannon includes all of the, you know, factual reactions to each lie. And it's something like the epic mendacity of Mitt Romney or something like that. But I mean, and we've talked about this before. The reason he's doing that is he knows that maxim that we've been talking about on the show, which is that a lie travels halfway around the world before the truth gets its shoes on. And that's what the campaign is all about. Get that lie out there, get it injected into the conversation before anyone has a chance to fact check it. Because as soon as we fact check it, you know, it'll be buried. It'll be back on the back pages, whether it's, you know, the metaphorical back pages of cable news or the internet or literally the back pages of the newspaper.
Right.
So the debunking will not get nearly as much publicity as the lie itself. And that's the strategy. That's the plan with the Romney campaign. And it's that kind of ability to sell out that, you know, we see in broadcasting, we see in politics all the time. We definitely see it in the corporate world. And all of that is being combined into the Romney campaign. It's remarkable. It's absolutely remarkable. So, got to take a quick break. We'll come back and really, really seriously and officially dive into the show right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
We're back. You know, I rearranged all of my buttons, so if I occasionally hit the wrong thing during the course of this show or the after party tomorrow, it's because all of my playback buttons are now all scrambled around. I try to organize them in a more efficient way, but you know, I'm kind of a creature of habit, so I reach for the certain keys on my keyboard that correspond to this this software I use. It's like a virtual cart deck. And I'll reach for the wrong thing out of habit and press the wrong button. And that's bound to happen once in a while here on the show.
Why didn't you just leave it the same? What's the difference?
Well, because I wanted it, because it was all scrambled all over the place. So like every time I would go to take a break, I'd have to hunt and search my keyboard for where the music was and then where the buzz liners go. And so what I wanted to do was put all of the official show business kind of stuff at the top of the interface here and then put all of the miscellaneous happy crappy down towards the bottom, you know. But even still, it's still kind of spread out. Like I've got all of my radio jingles at the very bottom. But the open, by the way, you know, the open of the show, I don't preassemble that. I actually play all those things back to back on the fly. I mean, it's not a lot of stuff, but you kind of have to be a little attentive and fleet-footed in order to get it all worked in there without a mistake. So, but it's, you know, it's sort of spread all around. And so my keyboard corresponds with this software. And so what I'm trying to do is get everything coordinated so it's more intuitive. You know what I mean? And so maybe by maybe by this time next week, I'll have it all committed to memory and habit. Anyway, so, you know, on the radio topic, I meant to mention this. Guess who's ending his radio show on July 27th of this year?
I have no idea.
Watergate burglar G. Gordon Liddy is is leaving the airwaves as of July 27th. And
is he leaving? Is he leaving through a locked door that he breaks the window?
Yeah, he's gonna burn his arm. He's gonna eat a rat, and then he's gonna karate chop his Ford Pinto and head out on his merry way. You know, I had the misfortune of working across a sheet of plate glass from G. Gordon Liddy when he was doing his show back in the early 1990s. I worked at WJFK. And that's where G. Gordon Liddy did his show. And so while I was prepping for the show that I actually worked on, which was the Don and Mike show, which came on right after the G. Gordon Liddy show. So while I was prepping for the Don and Mike show, I'd be there in the newsroom right across from G. Gordon Liddy while he was doing his show. And G. Gordon Liddy, his nickname for me was High Pockets because I'm tall. Get it? And G. Gordon Liddy is right. About 3 feet tall. G. Gordon Liddy is a very small man. But G. Gordon Liddy is a very scary man. G. Gordon Liddy, because he was convicted, one of the only people to be really convicted and sent to prison over Watergate, he's forbidden from owning guns. He can't own a firearm. And so he carries with him at all times like these various ninja bladed weapons. He's had like he's got a stabbing ninja weapon in an ankle holster. So where he could take that thing and probably in the blink of an eye, he can whip that bladed weapon out and cut your entrails out before you even know what's happened to you. So, you know, he's a scary guy. He's one of those scary guys from history. Like I mentioned before, he burned his arm. They talk about it in All the President's Men. Like, you know, he does this as a parlor trick, like as a show at parties. He puts a lighter up to his arm, like Mr. Joshua in Lethal Weapon, like Gary Busey in Lethal Weapon, which was sort of inspired by Liddy. And you know, someone asked him, he said, well, what's the trick? I mean, how do you do it? And Liddy's response is, the trick is not minding. And that's my
it's a line from Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah.
Right, which also, by the way, if you happen to have seen Prometheus, plays very heavily into that, which now seen that movie twice.
Oh, so, yeah. We're going to talk about Prometheus.
The trick is not minding that it hurts. Yeah,
the trick is not minding, right. But
the trick, William Potter, is not minding that it hurts.
Yeah. So Liddy, you know, and Liddy's radio show, it might be the worst right-wing radio show out there. I mean, there are a lot of D-bags on right-wing radio. You know, Mike Gallagher is one of them. Dennis Miller is another one. Like a lot of terrible, terrible radio guys who don't. What? Dennis?
Who's the second guy?
Dennis Miller. we both giggle maniacally because I don't know if you want to mention
it's an inside joke just for me and Bob.
That's right.
Maybe someday we'll talk about that on the after party when I want to get myself in trouble.
Okay, good, good. But Liddy is the worst of them all because, I mean, you know, here's, and I'm not making this up, the first hour of G. Gordon Liddy's 3-hour broadcast, G. Gordon Liddy reads the newspaper. I'm not saying that metaphorically, like, oh, here's something interesting that I saw in the Washington Post. And then he reads the headline and starts commenting on it. No. G. Gordon Liddy opens up the paper, several newspapers right in front of him, and just starts reading.
This comes to us from the Washington Times. Headline.
Wow.
Former President George W. Bush releasing a book.
And then he just starts reading. And
now we go to the next story. This comes to us from the New York Times. Dateline. Minneapolis.
And he's a hero.
Like, oh, God.
That's the thing. You know, he's a hero. He's like a hero to these jackasses, just like Ollie North is a hero.
That's right. That's right, because he didn't rat on his friends.
Another criminal.
Whereas John Dean, I almost said James Dean, John Dean did rat on his friend. And so that's like, John Dean is like Liddy's arch nemesis.
Yes.
And it wouldn't shock me that G. Gordon Liddy has occasionally referred to John Dean as his arch nemesis.
Yeah, that sounds like something Liddy would say.
Yeah, it's like
since Liddy does come off as like one of the Justice League supervillains.
So yeah, it's, and these are all reasons why. And you know, I don't mind saying this because it's years later. I mean, I was, you know, 21 years old, 22 years old when I was working on that show. You know, and now I'm almost 41. So I don't mind saying that G. Gordon Liddy was a little intimidating to work with. One time he came up and yelled at me because there was a photograph of David Letterman pinned to the wall of the newsroom.
And take that thing down, High Pockets. Take that down. It's distracting to me while I'm doing my show, while I'm reading the newspaper for an hour.
So, Mr. Liddy, I can't. It doesn't belong to me. I'm not going to take it down.
Well, I'll get you.
You know, this is like evil genius talk. You know, and then he storms off. So he's what's his name?
He's God. I can't. He's Mistleplick or whatever the hell his name was.
Mistleplick.
One of Superman's arch nemesis.
Yeah, or it's like he's Mistleplick by way of Dr. Evil.
Right.
I'll just bide my time.
But so I couldn't.
What happens if you say his name backwards?
Ah, foiled again. Curses. In summers, we would make meat helmets and take luge lessons.
So it came down to this. I could not urinate in the bathroom if G. Gordon Liddy was in the bathroom. I mean, just I could not get it to work. Even if I really had to go and I'm standing there at the urinal and Liddy walks in and walks up to the next urinal. That was it. I'd have to zip up, turn around, and walk right out of there because it was just not happening. Because, I mean, here's a Watergate.
Did you have penis envy or something?
No, I was just afraid of losing it to his ninja bladed weapons, you know. And so, you know, just suddenly like,
that's
oh, high pockets.
I'm referring to my penis from now on as that ninja bladed weapon.
Ninja bladed weapon. Like, well, because, you know, I worked for a rival show that he hated. And then our show hated him. And so I was just afraid that one time he was just going to snap, you know, because like when he was released from prison, he went out and in front of all the press and everything waiting outside the prison. His wife picks him up driving a Pinto and he walks up and he karate chops the hood of the Pinto. I mean, this is the Ford Pinto that we talked about before that it used to explode inexplicably and without warning. And he's karate chopping it.
He's insane.
You know, he's insane. He's an insane man. And he worked for easily the most evil administration in modern history, and with a bunch of people like Howard Hunt and Frank Sturgis, yep, and all of these creepy guys who have weird circuitous associations with not only Watergate, of course, where they're directly involved, yep, but also with, you know, rumors and conspiracies about the Kennedy assassination too. And this guy and Liddy was in cahoots with all those guys. So try
Jacobo Arbenz and the United Fruit Company.
So it was just, yeah, I just couldn't go because Liddy was right there. I mean, literally right there. I mean, there were two urinals in that WJFK public bathroom and, you know, there was just no, you know, it was, there's G. Gordon Liddy. Well, okay. See you later, Mr. Liddy. I got to go. All right. Well, we're going to take another break and be back right after a word from Bubble Genius, right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Indeed, that's what it's called. Everyone says, well, what's Bubble Genius right at the front of the name of the show? What does Bubble Genius have to do with Bob and Chez? Well, it's because they sponsor the show. It's like our nod to, you know, the early days of television when they do, like, the Texaco Star Hour. Or some of those shows that had, like, the sponsor incorporated into the name of the show. And I always thought that having the Bob and Chez show brought to you by Bubble Genius was just too many words. Still kind of too many words, but that's okay. Because they've been supporting the show since the very beginning, and we're happy happy to have Bubble Genius before even our names appear. And so really, seriously, buy their soap. If you're not buying your bath and body products from a vegan, liberal, independent business, and you're going to Walmart or you're going to Bed Bath & Beyond, curse you. What the hell are you doing? Go to BubbleGenius.com and buy their stuff. And you'll feel good, you'll smell good, and you'll feel good about where it came from. Here's the latest word from Bubble Genius.
Ah, summer love. There's nothing like it. Those delicious, carefree days filled with fun in the sun and long walks on the beach. Fall head over heels again with Summer Love Bath Collection, only from Bubble Genius. You'll love this set of warm weather wonders, which includes Life's a Beach, our rich, beachy-scented, foaming bath whip. It'll leave your skin smooth and smelling softly of the sunny seaside. You'll also get Beachy Clean, our sandcastle-shaped soap, Formula 421 Room Spray, and Bubble Pop, a deliciously scented rocket pop soap. All this and lots more in Summer Love Bath Collection. BubbleGenius.com, where it's summertime and the bathing is easy.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Shove us into your pants like a bladed weapon, like a G. Gordon Liddy bladed ninja weapon.
I like to imagine Sarah in a bikini.
Enter your promo code, Bob and Chez, B-O-B-A-B.
Do not edit that out, damn it.
C-H-E-Z. I won't. I mean, you know what? It's funny. We were talking about that. By the way, your promo code is Bob and Chez. You get 15% off. You enter it at Bubble Genius. We were talking about that because on the after party last week, we were discussing food, and I think and how modern food is formulated and chemically processed in a way that's making people sick. It's doing terrible things to people. And then I said something about, you know, I said something about, let's just put it this way, the impact on children and childhood development. And then you said something following that up.
The development of girls.
The development of girls. And then you said something following that up, which we will not be repeating. And it was way beyond my comfort level. And I'm no prude, but trust me. I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't cut anything out of the after party. I mean, the after party.
You realize, like, 99.9% of what I say is crap.
This was, it just made me oogie. I listened back to it. I debated with myself. I just said, nah, you know what? It's making me oogie. I got to take it out. Sometimes that happens. But not, I mean, with the after party, hardly ever. I mean, the after party is completely unfiltered. But that had to go. I mean, I'm glad you brought that up because I think the big story that broke right before the show has been this Michigan House Representative Lisa Brown, this Democrat from Michigan, who was addressing the Michigan State House about this awful anti-abortion, anti-woman law that they're getting ready to pass there. And so Lisa Brown was talking to talking on the floor, reading prepared remarks. And I have the tail end. This is the last 1 minute, the last 60 seconds of what she had to say. And you'll hear and listen to the very end. At the very end, she says something controversial. But I wanted to include the last 1 minute because she makes a really good point about religious freedom regarding abortion. And I want to play that, too. So this is the entire last 60 seconds.
Yesterday, we heard from the representative from Holland speak about religious freedom. I'm Jewish. I keep kosher in my home. I have two sets of dishes, one for meat and one for dairy, and another two sets of dishes on top of that for Passover. Judaism believes that therapeutic abortions, namely abortions performed in order to preserve the life of the mother, are not only permissible, but mandatory. The stage of pregnancy does not matter. Wherever there is a question...
Oh, yeah, that's one of the things in the Michigan bill, that
what?
All abortions, regardless of reason, would be banned after 20 weeks. Do you get to week 21... Okay, or let's say week 20 plus 1 day or plus 1 hour, and this fetus is going to kill you. Sorry, too late. You got to.
No, you know what that means? You go to the neighboring state.
That's right.
As much as that sucks.
And well, yeah. Then the problem there is what if you can't get to the neighboring state?
I hear you. I'm not saying that that's a preferable option. I'm just saying, you know, screw you, Michigan. I'm going next door.
Let's continue. Here's Lisa Brown.
Of the life of the mother or that of the unborn child, Jewish law rules in favor of preserving the life of the mother. The status of the fetus as human life does not equal that of the mother. I have not asked you to adopt.
That's, by the way, she's assuming that Republicans really give a rip what Jewish people have to say.
Republicans,
right. The meme among Republicans right now when they talk about religious freedom is to throw in the Judeo in front of Christian as if they're somehow inclusive of everybody.
Christian.
Yeah. Well, they say, oh, Judeo-Christian value. You know what? No. They're all about just the Christian values. They don't care about the Judeo.
No, they just want to. The only thing that certainly the Tea Party Republicans give a crap when it comes to Israel and Judaism is to make sure that the Israelis are safely in place so that can usher in, you know, the second coming of Jesus, and he won't be pissed off and kill us all or whatever the hell the Bible says. I don't know. However they interpret that crap.
That's exactly right. They don't care. As soon as they watch the Passion of the Christ, the Jews are thrown right under the bus. That's it. So the Judeo part, it's utter BS. Here's more of Lisa Brown.
And adhere to my religious beliefs. Why are you asking me to adopt yours? And finally, Mr. Speaker, I'm flattered that you're all so interested in my vagina, but no means no.
And there it was. There it was.
Damn.
She said vagina. Yeah. She said the V word. She said vagina on the floor of the Michigan
Good
House.
Good for you.
Good. And so now Republicans have barred her from speaking on another issue because she used, quote, offensive language.
Yes, offensive language. We can't say vagina. We're that puritanical. We are unable to say the given name, the inoffensive name that we have given to our sex organs.
That's right. That's right. The medical
The
word.
Official name, the official terminology, the medical terminology for our sex organs, we can't say that.
Yeah. Quick break back after this.
This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Always love them.
Yeah, I love this song. It was kind of this is the U2 track, "Hold Me, Thrill Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me" from the Batman Forever soundtrack.
Batman Forever album is actually really good.
It is
a really good soundtrack.
Yeah. The movie was
Attack is on there.
Oh yeah,
Devlins are on there. Yeah, Seal I think was on there. It's good stuff.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And the movie was
that
kind
was another
of a,
thing I used. That's another thing I used to listen to while getting high all the time, by the way. I used to do ecstasy to that.
Sitting there in your car, shooting up.
No, I wasn't sitting in my car. I had a loft at that time.
Oh, okay. Listening to the Batman Forever soundtrack.
I did, I swear. I'm weird.
Oh, my
Everything
God.
For me is based around like what drug I was doing at the time.
Everything for me it revolves around whatever Batman movie was out at the time.
There you go.
And I remember vividly, I was working at my first real radio job when that movie came out, and I had the radio station I was working for gave me a press pass for the movie theater, the local movie theater, so I could go in and I could see every movie they were showing as often as I wanted for free. And it was the summer that Batman Forever came out, and I swear to God, I saw so many movies. I would just go. I would just like, because I'm working weird hours in radio, I would just have like a free afternoon. I would just be, I'd have nothing to do for an entire afternoon. Oh, those were the days. Never again. And I work for myself and I don't get afternoons off. I used to go and just watch one
movie.
Oh, like
now? Like, no, I this summer I've done that. Because I'm working, I'm really working, you know, from home.
Yeah.
So yeah, there have been, obviously I was able to see Prometheus. You know, I saw the Avengers in IMAX like an afternoon a couple weeks ago. I mean, yeah, it's kind of nice.
And you can kind of tell that we're in the summertime too. We're we're both kind of in summertime mode. I mean, this show is this today's show is a great example of that. We're talking about movies. We're talking about DJs. I'm telling stories about not being able to pee in front of G. Gordon Liddy.
You know. Yeah, it's got, you know, you got to be laid back a little bit. It's summer.
I was going to talk about the big Romney gaffe of the last week. You know, this is one of those things that happened soon after we wrapped last week's show. But it, to me, it's still relevant and speaks to everything we've been discussing on the show so far during the election topics. Romney, and I'm sure you're aware of this by now, Chez, and most people listening in are too. Romney was talking about hiring government workers, about how the president wants to hire. This is all about when the president said the private sector is doing, quote unquote, just fine. Private sector, right. You know what? He was, first of all, the president was exactly right about that. The private sector is doing just fine. There's nothing wrong with the private sector. Private sector is cranking along. They're sitting on record cash assets. Highest cash assets since 1959. All right. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has doubled. You know, inflation is low. I mean, there's just, you know, a credit debt is going down. Jobs are being added every month. Private sector is doing okay. It could do better. It could always do better, irrespective of who's president. But suffice to say, for the president to say that, they're doing fine. You know who's doing bad? Who's doing poorly? State and local governments. And so the president naturally wants to hire, wants to give more federal money to the state and local governments to hire more workers, more firemen, police officers, more teachers, more public sector jobs. But he's being blocked. He's being blocked. So therefore, public sector jobs are getting hammered. In fact, so significantly, I mean, we're talking about over 1 million jobs here, that it's actually holding back the recovery. It's holding back a reduction in the unemployment level. So here's Mitt Romney last week, last Friday, Chess. Obama wants to hire more government workers. He says we need more firemen, more policemen, more teachers. Did he not get the message of Wisconsin? The American people did. It's time for us to cut back on government and help the American people. So Mitt Romney said point blank that he wants to cut back on firemen, policemen, and teachers. You know, in the name of reducing government. So naturally, the guy's been hammered about this. And thank God by mainly the Obama campaign, because the Obama campaign let this one go by. They might as well just throw in the towel.
Yeah.
So thank God. And then, you know, so you got to wonder why on earth would Romney want fewer firemen, policemen and teachers? Well, it's because all they want to do is privatize this stuff. They don't want public sector workers. They want to drown government in the bathtub. Doesn't matter whether it's state, local, or federal government. Drown government in the bathtub and commission it all out to privateers and for-profit companies.
Yeah. Right.
So this way, their buddies on Wall Street, probably people who they've done business with.
Right.
You know, it's
eventually, all police forces are going to eventually be like OCP and RoboCop.
That's right. Or, you know, or famously Blackwater in Iraq.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the mission, because, you know, much like Dick Cheney had a financial stake in the invasion of Iraq, the occupation of that country. But you know, so then in order to cover his tracks on this, because he's as I said, he's getting hammered on it, and rightfully so. Because usually I thought the Republicans were supposed to be the, you know, the law and order party. The party it's all about, you know, police, you know, support the guys with the NYPD shirts and the FDNY shirts after 9/11. You know, they're never hesitant to exploit the rescue workers from 9/11 for political purposes. Meanwhile, would they just prefer that those guys lose their jobs because they want to privatize those services? So here's how Romney kind of tries to cover his tracks. He says, of course, teachers, firemen, and policemen are hired at the local level and also by states. The federal government doesn't pay for teachers, firefighters, or policemen. So obviously that's completely absurd. Well, wrong again. Of course, yes, the federal government pays for teachers, firefighters, and policemen. Of course they do. There's billions and billions in grants and other forms of aid to the states and local governments from the federal government to pay for just those things. There's a whole list of them. I think Progress did an entire like bullet point list of programs that went to aid teachers, firefighters, and police officers. You know, there was billions in the stimulus bill. The stimulus bill, which Mitt Romney is against, that went to education, firefighters, for, you know, first responders, things like that. $4 billion to state and local law enforcement. $2.1 billion for Head Start. $53.6 billion to prevent cuts in local school districts and state colleges. And why did that need to happen? Someone asked Mitt Romney, why did we need to, where was the free market, Mr. Romney, stepping in to save those jobs? They didn't because they didn't have the money, because we were in a recession. And you know, the free market doesn't do jack squat during a recession. So that's why the government's got to step in and spend the money in the form of stimulus spending. That's the whole point of it, to stimulate the economy. But, of course, they've stripped the meaning out of that. The word stimulus now, I mean, they might as well be saying, you know, they might as well be speaking in tongues when they say stimulus, because the whole definition of the term has been divorced from it. So Gingrich, actually, Newt Gingrich, who's turning out to be Mitt Romney's worst enemy, is asked by John King on CNN. President says use federal dollars to help, you know, state and local governments. Governor Romney says no. And then Gingrich responds, we have to come to grips with how big the challenge is. And does that mean there will be fewer teachers? The honest answer is yes. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Gingrich, for that.
Fair enough. Sure, why not?
You know, I hope every week Gingrich shows up on television and undermines the Romney campaign. Starts telling
and you
the
know
truth.
He's, yeah, you know, and you know it's gonna keep happening. It really is.
Yeah.
Because he can't hide his loathe for Romney.
I know. And that's the great thing about Gingrich. And that's also why he would have been a scary president. But, you know, now he's been completely defanged. You know, it's just fun to watch him because he goes in there and he's got this kind of grinning, passive-aggressive way of just completely stabbing Romney in the back.
Oh, by the way, I was a huge fan this past week of the tepid Rick Santorum endorsement of Mitt Romney. As you said, you can Romney fever, catch it. You can cut the excitement with a knife.
Do you have it up there? Do you have the Santorum endorsement of Romney?
Quote? No, hold on. I could probably pull it up without too much trouble. But yeah, I mean, I even referenced you when I put it up because I'm like, I said, I'm like, Bob's been keeping track of the pulse pounding excitement and the full throated support that Romney's been getting from Republicans.
Yeah, I think I read some of them on the show a couple of weeks ago. It was like one of the endorsements was Romney is the nominee. You know, it's just like...
Right, exactly. Romney is, in fact, a carbon-based life form.
Yeah. What do we refer to it as, like, German efficiency in endorsements?
Here it is. Governor Romney is a tremendous improvement. I think we could have been even more of an improvement, but that's, you know, that issue was passed. Governor Romney is an important and dramatic improvement, and that's why we're behind him. Wow.
I mean, they're all basically like, yeah, Romney's the nominee and we don't want Obama. So, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Vote for Mitt Romney. He is Mitt Romney.
Yeah. And we were doing it the other day. It was cracking me up listening back and cutting together the show a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about that German efficiency of the
German efficiency. He is Mitt Romney. That should be his campaign slogan.
Yeah. He is Mitt Romney. We were using like German accents. Oh yeah, here's the post that I wrote up. This was back in April of all of the random endorsements of Romney right as he became the nominee. This is probably my favorite endorsement of Mitt Romney. Louis Gohmert says, quote, "I'm not as excited as I am desperate." Here's some news kind of right up your alley. This is a guy we like to talk about occasionally. Dylan Radigan's leaving MSNBC.
Oh, yeah. Spazzy white guy. Favorite spazzy white guy.
Spazzy white guy.
Well, I did see that, but what was the reason he gave for leaving MS?
He's leaving so he can, he's claiming.
Go spend time with himself?
Yeah, I said, that's what I wrote on the blog. I said, Radigan is leaving to spend more time with the sound of his own voice.
That's perfect. That's very well said. I like that.
He's the William Shatner of cable news. I mean, he really is.
He is, yeah.
I've described William Shatner as proto-Radigan. You know, it's just like they're cut from the same cloth. This sort of melodramatic, self-satirical, self-important celebrity, loving everywhere.
Radigan said some good stuff during his time. I mean, he really did. But yeah, he's definitely, he fits the spazzy white guy mold.
He's leaving to focus on his sort of greedy bastards meme. I guess he's probably going to start. He's probably going to go start a website or a blog or some sort of foundation, maybe like a PAC, to attack to pretend to attack the people he's actually in cahoots with, which are all the financial sector people.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you can't be a staple, sort of the flagship of CNBC for so many years, and then move over to MSNBC and suddenly be somehow believable as an anti-corporate crusader. It just doesn't fly. I don't buy it for a second.
Well, dude, and you know what? And that takes us full circle back to the original discussion of what are you willing to say to make money?
Uh-huh.
You know, how much of it is a business decision versus what you truly believe? Yeah, and there are people on the left, by the way, who have done that. I can think of one in particular whose name I won't mention, who is, she's very popular and has done a lot of good, but there's just no denying that her decision to be sort of on the left is really more of a business decision than it is a personal politics decision.
I know who you're talking about.
You probably know who I'm referring to.
Yeah. Here's part of Dylan Radigan's farewell speech. It's not working. Where's the button? My button's not working. Chaz,
I can't find your button.
I can't find the button. G. Gordon Liddy stole my button.
I was going to say, is Liddy in front of you?
Yeah.
Can you not function because of Liddy?
Yeah. Here's Radigan's farewell speech.
This was not written for chiefs.
Hear me. Hear this! Among my people, we carry many such words as this. Many worlds. Many are equally good and are as well respected. But wherever we have gone, no words have said this thing of importance.
So you get the idea. If you haven't seen Dylan Radigan's show, you got to go watch it and just watch it through the prism of Shatner. I swear to God.
You know what? You know what, actually? I hear that, and I miss Rick Sanchez. I really do. Sanchez absolutely was Shatner. In fact, when I used to work with him in Miami, one of our other producers did this great Shatner impression and would do sort of Rick as Shatner. It was beautiful.
That's right. You know what I love about that clip, by the way, and I meant to mention this last week, is the very end. He goes through this whole speech about the preamble to the Constitution, and then the idiot alien guy standing there goes, "I do not fully understand." And, I'm going to turn that into one of my catchphrases to describe the far right and trying to get through to them.
I
do not fully understand. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely, and we'll see you tomorrow in the after party. Bye, Jess.
See ya.
I do not fully understand.